It's an American AM. I'm your host, Henry Raines. With me in the broadcast studio, Alan Cross.
Yes, I are.
And we want to remind you of our websites, AmericanAM.com. You can get links to alternative and mainstream news sources. Also, links to past, present, and future guests and their websites. You can listen live at AmericanAM.com. Also, you can send your email comments to show at AmericanAM.com. Our archives are available at AmericanAM.podomatic.com, AmericanAM.podomatic.com. And again, as always, we want to thank you for keeping us in the top 10 in the news and political category there at Podomatic.com. And check out the archives. People around the world are. Our next guest, Dr. Marianne Cusimano Love, teaches graduate and undergraduate courses in globalization, terrorism, security, non-state actors. You know, I think teaching classes in terrorism is probably about preventing terrorism and understanding terrorism. I don't think she's that would be wrong.
Well, it seems like such so odd too, Henry. Dr. Love is teaching classes on globalization and terrorism.
It's all going to come together here because
you
understand this in just a moment. Sovereignty, U.S. foreign policy, much more. She teaches at both the Pentagon and the Catholic University. She's co-founder of the University Center for International Social Development. She was a fellow at the U.S. Naval Academy Center for the Study of Professional Military Ethics.
Wow.
She has her newest book will be Morality Matters, Ethics and the War on Terrorism. That's coming out in 2009, but she's the author of other books, including Beyond Sovereignty, Issues of a Global Agenda. And another forthcoming book, Unplugging the Cold War Machine, Globalization and the U.S. Foreign Policy. And let's not waste any more time and both thank her for her patience and her time. Dr. Cusimano Love, thank you so much for joining us on American AM this morning.
Absolutely.
Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be with you.
Yes, and I'm sure you're demonstrating both of the qualities of patience and tolerance listening to us. But you have such a fascinating background because here you are, you're working with the Pentagon, and you're also working at the Catholic University. How did you begin this journey in your life with these topics and these vehicles to do it?
Well, in Washington, folks move around across these circles more than you might think, and we have a program at Catholic University for military officers who want to earn a graduate degree. So that's kind of how I got that foray into moving in both those circles. And it's been rather easy to do because you would think that perhaps these viewpoints would be opposed towards the war or terrorism or other issues. But actually, folks in the military are those who are most cautious about the use of force. They most understand its limitations. They know they're going to have to bear the cost. And they were the most critical about going into Iraq in the beginning. So it's interesting that there's actually a lot more overlap between the viewpoints than you might think.
And, of course, right across the Tampa Bay from us is CENTCOM, and I know we've been told that people listen to us over there, so I bet there's probably more than a few people nodding their head as you were saying that. But let me just stay on this track just a little bit. You are of the Catholic faith?
Yes, I am.
And has that always been a strong feature in your life, factor in your life?
Well, my uncle was a missionary in Africa, and so I got the idea early on that you could put your faith into practice and have it be part of doing business, doing the way you look at the world, and that the world was bigger than my own neighborhood. So I think he kind of interested me in international affairs, hearing the stories of him in Africa, and that kind of got me on this track.
Well, Alan, I was so fascinated reading this last night. I don't know how far you've gotten in this, but at the bottom of the resume, you've written best-selling children's book. One's called You Are My Miracle. And You Are My I Love You. Now, where did that come in the chronology of your career?
Well, I don't get to write many happy endings in my work on international politics. So it's nice to have a little balance and have something I can do with my kids. And plus, in working my way through college, I had to take almost any job I could get to pay the tuition. And I did a lot of work with children, so it kind of flowed out of that work.
Well, they've been published in 6 different languages. And we'll get back to the main topic here, but again, I just can't stop my own curiosity from asking you about this. So what are the children's books? Like if some parent were listening and they hear about these best-selling children's books, You Are My Miracle and You Are My I Love You by Marianne Cusimano Love, and that is the name you use on those books, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What are those about?
They're about parent-child relationship and the best gift we can give our kids is our own time. I did a lot of work with kids in the Thurston Corda housing projects in Washington, and you know, contrary to what you might think about kids who are very poor and disadvantaged, they really just wanted people's time, the adults in their lives, their time, rather than the newest Sony PlayStation or what have you. So it's really just about the gift we can give of ourselves and everyday activities that parents and children do together.
And are these fiction or nonfiction?
No, they're children's picture books. So I guess it would be fiction, but it's nonfiction as well. It's just a life in the everyday child-parent relationship.
All right. And is there a website, because I didn't see that. That was the one thing I didn't see in the background material. Is there a website we want to direct people to?
They can go to my website, mariannelove.com, and there's information on both the children's books and my international politics work.
And let me just spell Marianne for the people, because there's a couple different variations. M-A-R-Y-A-N-N, love. I think most of our listeners can figure out that. But, well, maybe I better not, the way with text messaging is now.
Right.
L-O-V-E, M-A-R-Y-A-N-N, L-O-V-E. And is that, I'm sorry, was that .com?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I know Alan's already on his way there. And, well, you had planned on coming on and talk to us about political psychology, terrorism, and national security, but the best laid plans sometimes get awry. What brought you to this now? I mean, how did you enter into this field of study?
Into international relations? Well, I had to pick a major to get my scholarship, and international relations sounded the closest to undecided that I could figure. Because you had to study history, politics, language, economics, and then everything I took in it I enjoyed. So I continued in that path, and here I am today.
And Alan just made it to your website. Lovely picture of you there. And I like the little teddy bear up in the corner, too.
It's a great website. I love it. Of course, I'm easily distracted. You have to understand, you know, Henry is the political warmongering, not warmongering, but I'm the guy that
warmongering.
The guy that got like the touchy feeling.
Peacemongering.
That has a clue as to what's going on in the world. So,
All right. Well, one of the things.
Peacemongering, yes, that's right.
Yes, there we go. How does morality even fit into the war on terror? You have people that are willing to target civilian populations. So much of our popular fiction in the country right now, whether you're looking at 24, the show 24 on TV, is you have to fight violence with violence. How do you maintain any kind of balance?
Well, I think the misconception is, since September 11th, that terrorists fight dirty, so we have to do that as well. And the idea is that we would gain some type of advantage if we were to stoop to that level and use the dirty tactics that they do. But it really doesn't work that way. If you look at what are the strengths of the United States, we have the strongest military in the world by far. And when you start to undercut the legal and moral codes that guide that military, you are undercutting our own professional ethos, the troops' own morale, and our own standing and credibility and legitimacy in the world. So rather than helping us to fight dirty, it actually makes our cause worse. It undercuts our cause. Plus, if we're arguing that intentionally targeting innocent non-combatants is wrong, which is what terrorism is, intentionally targeting innocent civilians, if we're trying to argue that that's wrong, we can't do that by being inconsistent or not protecting civilians as well as we can.
Well, let's take something that just happened, I guess, in about the last 24 hours. We had a airstrike on a location in Somalia. We said we were targeting a terrorist. The reports from the ground, I'm not sure the exact number, somewhere between a half dozen and a dozen casualties. Also about the half dozen, 4 to 6 wounded. We also find out 4 cows lost their lives in the attack. How do we justify something like that? Because a question in my mind is how valuable or how necessary was it to kill whoever we were looking for, if we actually did kill the person we were looking for? How does that balance against the 10 or 12 other lives that were affected?
I think you see in a story like that precisely why the U.S. military does not want to call this a war on terrorism. The military understands that the military means are those that are going to be least effective in fighting terror. They can be useful at the margins in particular cases occasionally, but military means are not the primary way to defeat a terrorist network. Police, law enforcement, intelligence means are. So the military doesn't want to call this a war on terror because they know it's really not their job. And if you look at other countries that have successfully battled terror, they've done it through the kind of traditional law enforcement intelligence, very persistent means over time. Now, the British have been able to stop many, many attacks before they've occurred, and no terrorist group has ever defeated a democratic government. You just have to engage in this kind of patient game until you can overtake them over time, and these groups kind of spurred out of their own accord with that careful pressure applied over time.
You know, Dr. Lev, I think this also speaks to the way we conceptualize the other people here in the United States. I don't know how many times I hear people saying, well, those people, and they think this way and they think that way. And I have to imagine that there's somebody on the other side of the ocean saying, well, those Christians, those Americans, you know how they are. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions on both sides about the individual cultures?
Well, on this side, I think the misconception is that there's some one whole Islamic culture, and that culture is against Western values, against democracy, against Christianity. If you look at what are the most populous Muslim countries in the world where Islam is practiced, they're some of our biggest allies: India, Indonesia, Turkey. So, you know, when we make these aspersions against whole classes of people, we're insulting our very allies who are incredibly important to us. And it's not true that Islam is incompatible with democracy and that there can't be some commonality of our values. So I think on this side, that's the major misconception, kind of generalizing from the few extremists to the whole culture at large. On the other side, I think that the misconception is that, again, we're a monolithic United States, that we all are in lockstep with the policies of this government, and that we're also in lockstep with the policies of the Israeli government or other viewpoints. I mean, they've been able to gain a lot of traction because of the idea that the United States is kind of behaving as an imperial power and that we're kind of tromping all over the globe without being very careful about the cultures and countries in which we're doing business. And frankly, it doesn't help that we are allied with a lot of governments that are not democratic and are oppressing their own people. So that hurts us as well internationally.
We're speaking with Dr. Marianne Cusimano-Love, and her website is marianlove.com, MARYANNLOVE.com. And Dr. Love, a lot of people say they're willing to do anything. In general, they're talking about Muslim people or Arabs, and they're willing to kill innocents. They're willing to strap a bomb to us, kill other innocent people. Who's been responsible for the most deaths of innocent people in recent years?
Well, that's the viewpoint of the other side. I mean, Al Qaeda continually brings up, you know, U.S. Bombing campaigns around the world, U.S. military interventions in the world, going all the way back to World War II and the dropping of the atomic weapons. And they say, you know, how can we criticize them for their actions when we've been killing innocents as well? And
we need a little more volume, Dr. Love.
I think that's why our means matter so much, because in a 24/7 news environment, anytime the U.S. government, whether intentionally or not, kills noncombatants, that's broadcast internationally immediately. So if we don't want to be compared that we're doing just the same thing as them, tit for tat, we need to make sure we pay very close attention to our moral and legal codes.
You know, we've seen all the violence in Gaza just very recently. I mean, it's an ongoing problem, but especially very recently. And when Israel does, quote, a targeted strike against a Hamas official, they always say, well, we're not targeting civilians, but they're firing into a civilian dense area. Isn't that just sort of a semantic game? How can you target one individual in a group of people and say you haven't targeted the people around them, too?
I think you see in that example exactly why military means are very ineffective at fighting terror. To fight terror effectively, you have to be able to know who the folks are who are launching those rocket-propelled things, where they are, how they get their supply chain, and be able to shut them down with law enforcement and intelligence information. Just using the military means blanketed across the whole community is going to cause more outrage. It's going to create the next generation of terrorists who perhaps were not opposed to your policy prior to. So I think with the Israeli government, if military force worked at defeating terror, you would see the Israelis being victorious over the Palestinians decades ago. The fact that they weren't shows that military means don't oppose terrorism most effectively.
Alan?
Well, one of the things that I noticed is that anytime you get groups that come together to try to work out these differences, then you have major assassinations. This happened just recently in Iran when a large number of the or Iraq when the large number of the Iraqi chieftains got together, the tribal chieftains got together to try to work out some compromise, and there was an assassination and took out a number of the heads of the tribes. My concern is that you've always got these extremists out there that want this chaos. They live for this whatever it is they're living for, and they're not going to allow this to happen.
That's precisely true. You're never going to zero out the extremists. You're never going to zero out terrorism because it's such an easy and low-cost operation to do. But what you're trying to attempt to do is get rid of the major players, get rid of the major cells, and undermine their ability to be very effective. So eventually they give up the ghost. Like we've seen the disbanding of the IRA in Ireland, the Basque separatists in Spain. Those groups are no longer because of continued persistent pressure by their governments. But you always are going to have individual targets, and you know the idea is to try to get that down, that level of violence down as far as you can.
Dr. Love, are you familiar with the book Brave New War by John Robb?
With some of the information warfare, cyber warfare.
Right. The idea, though, that the classic of an insurgent group is being blurred, that the criminalization of insurgency is really accelerating, and that we're getting to a point where you can't separate the criminal enterprises from the rival groups that are struggling for power. So how does your point of view, your philosophy, work into something like that? Because it's not simply finding love and understanding. You've got global gangsters or regional gangsters fighting for control of the wealth.
Exactly, and that my book Beyond Sovereignty goes into this and how criminal groups are able to operate across international borders and how those criminal networks are often financing the terror activities. You see this in Afghanistan where they're using the drug money from the Afghan poppy economy to finance violence. So obviously those things are linked, and that again shows how you need law enforcement, intelligence, operations working across borders, but that's going to be more effective than using the military means because that's how you're going to undermine these folks, is being able to disrupt these illegal networks that finance them as well as the illegal networks that do the violence.
Well, and that begs another question. It's a little bit off your focus, but I think maybe you might be aware of it. I'd like to know if you are anyway, because sometimes we don't even know what the networks are within our own government. Have you been following these series of exposés in the Times of London, mainly based on the revelations of Sybil Edmonds?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The Times of London, in it's three installments so far. They've been front-page Sunday Times stories. First of all, are you aware of who Sybil Edmonds is? Okay, she was an FBI translator hired shortly after 9/11, within days. Speaks Farsi, other Arabic, speaks Arabic and other languages in the region. And the FBI had an incredible backlog of tapes to review. Well, to get to the point, there's plenty of material. 60 Minutes interviewed her in 2002. Charles Grassley and Patrick Leahy have vouched for when she testified under oath before the Judiciary Committee, but the government has retroactively put a state secret gag order on her. She also testified in the 9/11 Commission. Finally, after 5 or 6 years of no investigation, she is risking her own the repercussions on herself to tell her story. She's gone to the Times of London, and they have found overlapping corroboration from of not the specific allegations of what's in a phone conversation, but the general corroboration from two other CIA sources and two FBI sources. She says that the third highest ranking person in the State Department, named in other articles as Mark Grossman, had a network of moles in the academia and in the administration, and was selling in the Bush administration and establishing the contacts previously in the Clinton administration when he was the Turkish ambassador, was selling nuclear secrets to Israel and to Turkey, Turkey reselling them to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. And she alleges that she overheard arranging pickups of the payoff at the Turkish embassy, similar things like that. The Times of London, through their other sources, has confirmed the FBI was investigating this, although the FBI denies the existence of the file. But the Times was able to find other documents proving the existence of the file. And actually, this individual, Mark Grossman, even outed the company, Brewster Jennings, with Valerie Plame Wilson was using as the, and the CIA was using as an undercover business to prevent nuclear proliferation. He actually told the Turkish officials, according to these alleged transcripts and translations, that Brewster Jennings was a CIA company in 2001, 2 years before the whole controversy about Valerie Plame Wilson being outed. This has not appeared in the U.S. mainstream media, although it has been featured around the world now in Israel, Turkey, India, Asia, all through Europe. So I'm sorry to take us on such a detour, but I'm always curious to ask people that are working in the spheres you do if you are aware of that, but evidently not.
Well, I've not been following this particular case, but what you're describing on private networks and private companies selling nuclear secrets and technologies is the new face of proliferation. And that's the face of proliferation that this government hasn't been dealing with. When we talk about proliferation, we act as if it's only about countries doing this, and we have to stop the North Koreans from passing on nuclear secrets, stop the Pakistanis, etc., and put pressure on the governments of countries. But that's not where proliferation is coming from these days. It's coming from private companies, private individuals, in it to make a buck. We know this from the AQ Khan network out of Pakistan that the United States government and others were able to find out about and shut down, we believe, but we still haven't gotten complete information from the Pakistani government to determine whether all of the network has been shut down.
And allegedly, some of this information that this Undersecretary of State was selling off has actually went to the Khan network. And the amazing thing about it is we have no investigation here in the United States over it, even though, as I said, Senators Leahy and Grassley have spoken of their confidence in Sybil Edmonds and other groups. And instead, he has gone to work for Cohen and Associates, the former defense secretary, and now works in that lobbying group. It's just amazing.
In our book, Beyond Sovereignty, we go into this case of private sector proliferation and what it means when businesses and companies are involved and how governments need to change the way they look at proliferation and need to change policies to investigate and follow the activities of private companies and private individuals, which we're not geared up to do right now.
And in your book, Beyond Sovereignty, Issues for a Global Agenda, is that available through your website, MarianneLove.com?
It's available wherever books are sold, yeah.
Okay. All right, but there's a link there that will take people
exactly.
Right to where they need to go. And when are your other forthcoming books going to be available? Because I see two different ones here, Unplugging the Cold War Machine.
Should be next year.
Okay, and then you're going to follow that one with Morality Matters?
Exactly. That should be coming out next year, and another edition of Beyond Sovereignty. So,
Alan, go ahead.
Your books are so very highly specialized. Do you have much of a problem getting a publisher interested, or do you have a relationship already with a publisher that it gets a little easier after the first one?
Well, actually, the title is specialized, but the way it's written is very accessible, so it really hasn't been a problem.
Excellent.
Give us, I know you probably have to run, but if you don't mind, give us a quick little preview of Unplugging the Cold War Machine, Globalization, the U.S. Foreign Policy, because we certainly seem to have a new Cold War developing with our relations with Russia.
Well, we think that we have changed the structures, our foreign policy institutions. We think that after 9/11, we had all this intelligence reform. The American public, I think, believes that we've changed our government in ways that are helpful for the new problems we face. And in fact, that's true. We have the same old government geared toward the Cold War problems, trying to fight groups that work across borders, terrorist groups, criminal groups, etc. And we're not geared up that way. We don't even have folks who understand religion at all in foreign policy, for one example, even though that's a major dynamic in the conflicts we're seeing around the world today. So the argument is we really need to shake it up more than we have and get institutions that can meet the kind of challenges we face today.
Dr. Love, we have somebody that just called in that wants to speak to you. Do you have time to take that call and maybe one other?
Sure.
Okay. Gene, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, ma'am. I'm unaware of any population of any country that actually, you know, endemically supports globalization and this new world order. Can you discuss where the source of the push for globalization is coming from, since it doesn't seem to be coming from the population of countries itself?
Well, populations do support it in the sense that we all like our internet, we all like our media, we like the accessibility to information, we like the ability to travel freely. And so those aspects of globalization, I think the public is in favor of. But the economic globalization that comes under the most scrutiny and the greatest criticism is fully pushed by both governments and industry, that the advantages to be gained from basically economies of scale, that they only have one set of rules rather than multiple international rules to play by. And that's where we have to be really very careful, because those rules are being made without participation of the public and often without people even knowing what's in those rule books as they're being written.
Or as we say here on American AM, no globalization without representation.
Exactly. Yes.
So, Gene, did you have a follow-up?
Well, she really didn't answer the question of where it's coming from. I mean, you're saying that, that governments are behind it, but governments are supposed to represent the will of the people. If the will of the people doesn't support globalization, where is the push to cause governments to be behind the globalization initiative? That's my, you know, real mystery that I have, is no one seems to want to discuss who is behind, what forces are behind the push towards globalization when it's not the population.
Well, let me rephrase the question for you, Gene. Maybe.
Okay, please.
What interests benefit most financially by the current direction and structure that globalization takes? Is that okay, Gene?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And let me just get our phone line out. We may have time for one more call. 941-745-1490. 941-745-1490. Dr. Love, maybe my question confused it more.
No, I think that's true. And as I was trying to say, I think people like the benefits that they do receive from globalization. We like to be able to go into stores and buy goods and products from all over the world. We like to be able to have international phone calls, international travel. So there are aspects of globalization, especially telecommunications and travel, that people enjoy and want to continue. I think that what your caller is getting at, though, is that the economic aspects of globalization, particularly trade agreements that don't necessarily take into account the concerns of the population, he's wondering where does the impetus for that come from? And I think it comes from governments who believe that what's kind of a generic view, that what's business is what's good for the country, and kind of have this blind faith that markets will take care of everything without realizing that markets need to operate within rules that are represented by popular support. And when they don't have that popular support, the rules are very vulnerable and very fragile, because people don't agree that the rules are fair.
All right, let's take one more call. We have Wade on the line. Go ahead, Wade.
Very pleased with your guest today. She obviously will be aware of a movement in which I was a part of back in the last century, in the 50s. It was called World Federalism. And not to be confused with World Federalist, the right-wing bunch, but this was a group who thought that sovereignty, national sovereignty, was the great destroyer of the people. And we felt that the United Nations should have been developed into a true government, a world government, and they were very respectable people who believe that. I'm wondering if she knows of the movement and if she knows anything of its present status. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. World federalism, Marianne.
I do know of the movement, and I think that the features of the argument are now more broadly accepted, so it goes beyond people who are part of that particular group, but within academia and within government, there's a lot of recognition that sovereignty isn't cutting it. This is the way we've been organized since the late 1400s. And all of these problems we've been discussing today, international crime, international terrorism, are things that sovereign states can't handle alone. And they don't play well with others. They don't share well with others to try to deal with these issues that hurt people. So the question is, if the organization we have, the sovereign state, isn't working well, what do we do? And there's a number of different opportunities. You can have international governmental groups. You can have non-governmental groups, the civil society sector, the private sector. And that's basically what we have now, a hodgepodge of other actors trying to address these issues, because our country's governments aren't able to do this well. But it's not a single answer the way the old world federalism movement supplied, and there's not a lot of support for the idea of a single world government today. Instead, you see this movement towards trying to get different actors able to address different pieces of the problem.
We've been speaking with Marianne Cusimano Love, Dr. Love, and her book is, most recent book, is Beyond Sovereignty, Issues for a Global Agenda. The website is marianelove.com. That's MarianneLove.com. And while you're at it, check out her children's books also. You Are My Miracle and You Are My I Love You. And Dr. Love, it's been great talking to you, and we really appreciate the extra time you gave us.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking with you as well.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Love.
Bye-bye.
Great guest. Very young. I was very surprised. Usually a lot of the professors that we have on our show, by the time they get to this level, are, you know, in their 50s and 60s, and some of them are now consultants to this and that. Absolutely brilliant young lady. Really cool.
Yeah, you look at all the books she's written and all she's accomplished, and it's like, gee, what's wrong with me?
You slacker.
Oh, wow. We were speaking of Sybil Edmonds there, and I stumbled across this because, sometimes we think we're the ones just out on the edge here, the only ones talking about, you know, Congressman Henry Waxman, who's been on our show before.
Yes.
The change in leadership in the House. He's now the chairman of the Oversight Committee. You may be aware of the recent hearings he held on steroid abuse.
Right.
Couple rounds of that. He was taking questions. I guess it was in sort of a town hall setting. And he got a few more questions about Sybil Edmonds than he really wanted.
Really?
Yes. And because he previously had said when he was out of power, we need to do hearings on that woman, on
right.
the whistleblower side of it. Not necessarily what the most recent revelation is, but we need to talk to this woman. And now let's hear what he has to say when he gets asked about, when are you going to hold these hearings?
There we go. Hello, Congressman. As you know, Sybil Edmonds has information related to foreknowledge of 9/11 and also about congressional corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Is he
continuing? As you know, Sybil Edmonds has information related to foreknowledge of 9/11 and also about congressional corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And this year in March, you were given a petition with over 15,000 signatures requesting that you hold public hearings in the Sybil Edmonds FBI whistleblower case.
Wow.
And to date, your silence has been deafening. Do you intend to hold those hearings? And if so, when do you intend to hold them?
And I have no intentions at the moment to hold hearings on them.
Wow.
It continues.
With this issue and the Sybil Edmonds issue, how can you be spending time, a moment, on steroids and baseball when you have actual issues going on that need to be addressed by someone with backbone and spine on our behalf? And if you don't serve our interests, sir, whose interests do you serve?
There are a lot of issues that are important. And I think the fact that kids are taking steroids and suffering from the consequences of taking steroids because they see their heroes in sports using it, and they're given the following message: go ahead and use a drug that can hurt you, maybe even lead to your death. Go ahead and cheat, because cheating is okay to do. Those are the kinds of messages that I think a lot of our kids have.
So, it's about that nuclear stuff. I don't know about that. One more.
Congressman, I would like to say thank you very much for supporting all of our women's rights. You have been a champion. But there's one woman that you are not supporting. Her name is Sybil Edmonds. Let her speak. Under oath, in front of an open session to the American people.
Not an interview.
Yeah, you sure did. Get her out of here. Henry Waxman, Congressman. Oh, shoot. Let me get the phone number up here again. Congressman Waxman's number, should you care to express an opinion, is 202-225-3976. That's the direct number if you want to ask Congressman Waxman to hold hearings on this. It's 202-225-3976. I know you're still looking around for that pen or the pencil or just a crayon. 202-225-3976. Well, coming back, we will take up the whole global economic disaster and other fun stuff.
You've had an auto accident. You're in pain and dealing with attorneys. The last thing you want is for you to be treated just like another insurance claim form by your medical caregivers. That's why you need to know about MedFlorida Health Services. MedFlorida Health Services provides comprehensive treatment for victims of auto accidents. At MedFlorida Health Services, you can receive care from a board-certified medical doctor, a licensed massage therapist, an acupuncturist, all under one roof. MedFlorida Health Services will also coordinate attorney information and file your insurance claim. When injured in an auto accident, the one name to remember is MedFlorida Health Services at 373 Braden Avenue near the Sarasota Airport. Call them today at 359-9090. Don't wait. Same-day appointments available. 359-9090. That's 359-9090.
The best way to avoid an accident-related injury is to avoid the accident. Slow down. Drive defensively, and please wear your seatbelt. If you've been injured in an accident, you probably have questions. How will I pay the doctors? What if I'm out of work? Who will fix my car? You may not know where to turn. You're inundated with TV and radio commercials. You may even have received letters from lawyers or doctors. At Callens Little Delgado and Opstal, we understand how confusing an accident can be, and we want to help answer your questions. Call us today at 941-749-1446. One of our attorneys will meet with you and help answer any questions that you have. There's no charge to meet with us, and our fees are based on a percentage of what we recover for you. I'm Scott Callens at Callens Little Delgado and Opstal. We work hard serving our clients and our community. Call us at 941-749-1446 and let us help answer your questions. Callens Little Delgado and Opstal are proud sponsors of the Manatee County YMCA. For more information, call us at 941-749-1446 or reach us at makeempay.net.
Oh, I can't face another day of pain.
You don't have to suffer in pain another day. Dr. Owen McCarthy, specializing in orthopedics and sports medicine, has been bringing relief to sufferers of arthritis, auto accidents, work-related injuries, and sports injuries for over 30 years. A board-certified physician, Dr. McCarthy will take a conservative, cautious approach to your treatment, but he will get you relief. With offices in Bradenton and Sun City Center, Dr. Owen McCarthy can treat patients anywhere in our broadcast area. Give him a call today at 941-795-3844. 941-795-3844. Accepting Medicare, most commercial insurances, and private payers. Give Dr. McCarthy a call. 941-795-3844.
Good morning, American AM sports fans. As you've heard now, Superfly didn't come on, but we're going to switch to Shaft anyway. Henry, can you come up with Shaft here in the next few days?
We'll work on that day.
Okay, sounds good.
It's so sports-related.
Super Bowl losing and cheating. I say cheating. New England Patriots have re-signed Randy. I play when I want to play Moss to a three-year, $27 million contract. It remains to be seen if Moss will return to his selfish me before the team modus operandi prior to joining the New England Patriots in his record-setting season last year. Former Tampa Bay favorite and all-around good guy Warrick Dunn was released by the Atlanta Falcons yesterday. The 35-year-old Dunn is in the twilight of his career but could very well contribute to another team. What a superb individual this guy is. Voted Walter Payton Award for best all-around guy a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In the Grapefruit League, Cincinnati dropped 1-8-6 to the Twins in extra innings. And those beloved Pittsburgh Pirates continued their slide with their fourth straight loss, dropping 1-3-1 to the hated Philadelphia Phillies. You know, it doesn't look good for either one of these teams. I just don't think they have the stock to pull anything off this year.
Okay. I'm just getting my own ammunition here ready. I got a special sports story, but I want to hear everything you have to say.
That's it, man. When I go to the Grapefruit League, you know that's going to be the end.
Okay.
What do you got for us?
Ah, People Magazine confirmed that Tony Romo yesterday said that any talk of the pair's engagement, that would be with Jessica Simpson, are just rumors, and they're not headed to the altar, at least not for a while. And it sounds like Jessica Simpson's dad, Papa Joe, he says, Tony, I'm sure I'll get married one day. It's a bad syntax on the line there, but it looked like Daddy Simpson isn't too thrilled with Tony Romo. Let's go to phone lines. You're live on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if the sports guy had any news on the player with the twisted testicle.
With who?
I think he's going to have to research that.
What was it on? I couldn't hear him.
The twisted testicle.
Hell, there'd be a lot of football players getting hit in the groin. Are you kidding me?
Let's go to the phone lines. You're live on the air.
Am I okay to talk now?
Yeah.
Okay. John from St. Pete. How you guys doing?
Hey, good.
Hey, Dave. Is Dave on the line?
He's there.
Dave, I want to give you a clue here. You're talking about your... I'm going to get to my topic in just a second here, but help Dave if I can. Dave, what you need to do... let me ask you, how old are you?
Man, that's a very personal question.
Dave, come on, hurry.
I'm 46.
Okay. Dave, you need to go out and get a part-time job as a limo driver. Number one, okay? Number one, get a good company that's not going to screw with you, okay?
Yeah.
And get into everything going on in your area down there. And then while you're doing your homework in your car and doing all your other stuff, okay, making all the contacts with good clients, find out who's got the best deal on a limo, buy a limo with some of that money you're going to spend.
There you go.
This dude has no idea. You don't listen often enough, man. I don't have a license.
It sounds like a plan to me.
You don't have a what?
A driver's license.
It doesn't matter.
Made of the company.
Hey, Dave, if you go out there and put it in motion, everything will fall into place. That's the way things work.
That's right. You got to believe.
No, just go out there. You'll love it.
Henry's trying to talk me into being a male escort.
No, screw that.
All right. Hey, thank you, John. I got another caller.
Anyway, let me finish my point real quick, okay?
All right.
Ohio's going to be voting tonight. They have new voting machines. I wish you'd do a follow-up on any malfunctions with the black box voting Bev Harris tomorrow or the next day so we can get a full report of what really happened.
Which state? Which state are you talking about with new machines?
Ohio.
Okay. All right. We had a Diebold story, too, to talk about, too, but that'll have to wait. Thank you. You're live on the air.
Say, speaking of twisted testicles...
Let's
use Henry Waxman's attitude on this whole Sybil Edmonds thing. When we have an administration that lied the country into war that's resulted in the deaths of thousands and thousands of people, what kind of a message does that send to our young people? When we have Congress that refuses to engage in oversight as the role of the co-equal third branch of government, what kind of message does that send to our young people? When we have a congressman, Mr. Waxman, who refuses to investigate the allegations of selling nuclear secrets by this government and agents within this government to foreign agents, what kind of a message does that send to our children? Those are the questions that Americans need to ask.
You sound a little hot about this, Ken.
Huh?
You sound a little hot.
And they need to send Congress and Mr. Waxman a message. And I would suggest they get a carrier pigeon and send their concerns up to Congress.
I think what they need to do is tell them that Mark Grossman was selling steroids out of the State Department.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That might get their dander up, no doubt about
that. Hey, Ken. This stuff is a lot more tolerable if you just become indifferent.
There's no shortage of indifference in America, Dave. I'm sure you've noticed that.
Well, I'm leading the pack.
Okay. There's no lack of indifference.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
Hey, speaking of testicles.
No. Because I got a soundbite here I've been meaning to play. Because we're always on the cutting edge. Oh, bad choice of words for that one, wasn't it? American Idol tonight. Going right... Oh, yeah. With your topics, what you spend your time watching. See, you're just like Alan. I got everything ready to go with the cool segue, and then you just pull the rug right out.
I didn't pull it out. I just said, ugh.
Yeah. Well, UGG is like a paragraph when you only got 4 minutes left in the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Paula Abdul didn't want to twist a testicle on American Idol last week.
Nope.
But the inside front runner, the one that everybody's saying is this 17-year-old young kid, David. And this is what Paula Abdul said to him as she totally flipped out on American Idol and revealed much more than I ever wanted to hear out of Paula Abdul.
David, you are ridiculous. I want to squish you, squeeze your head off, and dangle you from my rearview mirror.
Hey, as long as you don't edit that thing down to David, you are ridiculous, we'll be okay.
Well, just one more time. It bears repeating. Just the visual of this.
David, you are ridiculous. I want to squish you, squeeze your head off, and dangle you from my rearview mirror.
That chick's on something.
Oh, and you can get more of her tonight.
You going to do the economic thing tomorrow?
Yeah, because we didn't have enough time to do it justice.
That's huge.
Yeah, I know it is. We had to talk about how we're kicking Mark Larson's butt. So
yeah.
We got distracted there.
Cool stuff.
And besides, people wouldn't know they could go hear Bobby Vinton.
Stay tuned tomorrow to the number one best American AM talk show.
The top rated Tampa Bay American AM. The highest rated show in Tampa Bay with the name American AM.
XM is kicking down the door, baby.
Oh, you better believe it. All right. They want that bill paid. Stay tuned for It's Your Gavel. Rick on the radio coming up after that. Oh, you should have heard him with James yesterday.
Again?
Oh, yeah. James came back for more.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Call me for this stuff, okay?
I did.
Oh.
You didn't answer.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Adios.
Bye. Thanks to Superfly Dave, to Alan Cross, to Dr. Marianne Cusimano Love, and all the callers and participants and listeners. We'll be back tomorrow with another American AM.
And I said, whoa.